Will the College World Series be settled tonight? Michigan? Wow, how about that? The LSU football coaches made their last stop, and they left it to the Big Easy. We'll have a full report on what was said. The Raging Cajuns are just 66 days away from the start of the college football season. What's it like working for Coach Billy Napier? And free agency right around the corner. What will the Pels do? All these stories and more today, Tuesday, June 25th, 2019.
And the pitch, that one hit high in the air, deep toward right field. Lede will look up and watch it leave. Jimmy Kerr's third home run of the College World Series. A two-run blast to right, and Michigan has a 6-3 lead.
Swung on and hit in the air to left center and deep. It is high, it is far, it is gone. Oh, what a home run. Over the loading dock into the crowd. Giancarlo hits his first home run of the year.
The 2-2.
Swung on, belted. Deep right field, and that ball is gone. Pinch hit, two-run homer for Jay Bruce. Fourth homer of the night for the Phillies. For Bruce, it's his 21st of the year, his seventh with the Phillies, and it's 12-6 Philadelphia.
Good afternoon. How are you, Acadiana, and around the world, however you are listening to 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. We got you for the next 2 hours, at least we hope so. CD back in the master control suite in the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of Delta Media. KLWB, yours truly here, Studio 1A. And it's great to be with you. Hope you're having a fantastic Tuesday. We'll see if tonight the Vanderbilt Commodores can keep this college baseball season going. Because last night, Michigan doubled up the doors and hits 14-7. They jumped out to a quick 4-0 lead after two innings. The doors came back with two in the bottom of the second to cut it in half. They narrowed it to one with one in the sixth to make it 4-3 Michigan. And then the Wolverines put up two in the seventh, one in the eighth, and they went to go on to win it 7-4, making me feel completely inferior because I picked Vanderbilt to win and to win this thing in two. So how wrong can wrong be? So congratulations to the Wolverines. Game two tonight from Omaha as Vanderbilt trying to keep this season alive. Well, Michigan just surprises me. 6 o'clock our time. First pitch. Vandy's now 57-12. Michigan 50-20. So we shall see. Pelicans making some moves. Todd Graffanini is now the new play-by-play voice on radio for the Pelicans. My good friend, and I'm friends with both of them. Sean Kelly getting a national gig. Todd Graffanini moving over from the Tulane Green Wave to the Pelicans, not very far from Ferret Street to Dave Dixon Drive. And in television, David Wesley, no longer the color analyst for the Pelicans. Antonio Daniels, who's done some studio work, he will be the new color analyst on television for the Pelicans. Just in case you wanted to know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Just a very, you kind of, the organization's kind of, you know, it's if you're good at the top, you'll be a good organization throughout. Well, it just goes to show you, the Sacramento Kings have just been a laughingstock in the NBA for years. And a former top executive was sentenced today, Monday, to 7 years in prison for siphoning $13.4 million from the team. Holy cow. You know, you're just bad. You're just bad. Plain and simple. A heartfelt good wishes to our good friend, the head baseball coach of the Raging Cajuns, Tony Robichaud, who suffered a heart attack. And we are thrilled to hear that Robes is doing very, very well in recovering. He had surgery following that heart attack. He's expected to make a complete recovery. So from all of us here at 103.7 The Game, get well soon, Coach. You are a legendary figure. You're on the Mount Rushmore of baseball coaches in the state of Louisiana. And we hope you have a speedy, safe, wonderful recovery. Yes, indeed. Let me tell you about our guest list today. Brody Miller from The Advocate will be joining us. The LSU coaching staff went to New Orleans, and Coach O, Steve Ensminger, Dave Aranda, Mickey Joseph, and Joe Brady were all there. And we've got some sound to play for you here shortly of what Coach O had to say, and I think more importantly, what Joe Brady had to say, because he is the, you know, I just took my daughter to see a couple of weeks ago to see Aladdin, and Joe Brady seems to be truly the diamond in the rough, as we say. He is the guy that's trying to bring this LSU offense into this century, to doing things that we've never seen before. And he talks about words like getting speed in space. And he talks about how everybody eats, which means we want the ball to be spread around all over the place, to be versatile, not to be so transparent and so predictable. Rather than let the defense apply pressure, he wants the LSU offense to apply pressure. And he has backed it up with stats and figures along the lines of, we don't want to max protect. We want to get, you know, the running backs and wide receivers, they didn't come to LSU to be blockers. Now, they're going to have to block at times, but he's of the belief, and I love this, max protect with only five. Your five offensive linemen, get everybody else, all the other five out there in space, get it out of the quarterback's hand quickly and see how that affects that pass rush. Man, I love that. I love that. How many times have we seen LSU football with a quarterback dropping back and you see two receivers out covered by four or five defensive backs and you wonder why he can't find somebody open? And you wonder why it takes so long to have the ball in his hand before he releases it. And you can only ask an offensive lineman to block for so long. If they block any longer, they're going to be holding. So it just seems like we're finally coming into something with this new passing game coordinator who has ideas that he wants to bring to LSU football in his first season on the job. And we'll hear from Joe Brady in just a smidge. So Brody Miller joins us in this hour. Hot Topics starts off hour number two. Patrick Crawford is the man who is the right-hand man of Billy Napier. He is in charge of the media for UL football. What's it like to work for Billy Napier? We'll find out from Patrick Crawford. And then with free agency right around the corner, always love visiting with Grant Hughes, our feature writer of the NBA for Bleacher Report. And we'll spend some time with Grant Hughes, plus some a history lesson, birthday wishes, and much, much more. We're presented each and every day by Hooters right there in Ambassador Caffrey Parkway, the newly renovated Hooters, ready to go. They're gearing up for the rest of your summer, and wait till you see what's going to happen when football season comes around. There's not a better place to watch all the games and to fill your tummy than at Hooters. Hooters just makes you happy. CD will take us to break. When we come back, we'll hear from Coach O and from Joe. We hope it's a happy, happy relationship, and that means wins. That's coming up next here on the Jordy Helfer Show.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back. 15 minutes after the hour. This is the Jordy Holtberg Show, brought to you by ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets. 59 of them in southern and central Louisiana. Something for everybody. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, you can't shop right at all. I love the ShopRite in Doosan. It's my favorite. I've been to a bunch of them. They're all fantastic. But there's something about the one in Doosan. It is so neat, so clean, so big, so it's got everything. It takes me an hour when I'm there just because I'm looking around at everything. They've got all kinds of gift items and everything you need, everything imaginable. Man, if you can't shop right at ShopRite, you just can't shop right at all. Now, this is our soundbite version of the show. The LSU Coaches Caravan convened yesterday in New Orleans. Ed Orgeron, his coordinators, Dave Aranda, Steve Ensminger, passing game coordinator, Joe Brady, and others. It's the last one of the year. Now the coaches get to, you know, wrap up things, and it's vacation time for them. They need to decompress, man, and get away from it all because it's coming pretty quickly. Coach O shared a sentiment that I have, and I know many of you have, when he talked about coming down to Nolens.
I love it, especially coming to New Orleans, a big area for us, great recruiting area for us. I get to see Bobby. I get to see Deuce. I brought my wife, Kelly. It's like a reunion, a bunch of friends. Just love being here.
Love being here. Of course, he's talking about Bobby Hebert, Deuce McAllister. Sat next to his wife at an LSU baseball super regional game. She was as nice as could be and fiery. Fiery, man. She's I love her. She's terrific. She is terrific. All right. So, Coach O's got a new boss. Here's his thoughts on his new boss, Scott Woodward, cut number three.
No, not really. Just been very supportive. Being from Louisiana, he and I hit it off right away. He's big into recruiting. He comes to our recruiting office, knows all about our recruits, very knowledgeable, even put me on a couple of recruits. I think he's going to be fantastic.
How about the AD putting the coach on a couple of recruits' names? How about that? I love it. I love it. You know, a year ago, it was all the negativism involved with LSU football. Nobody was really sure about Coach O. Everybody had picked him, man, maybe 6 wins, 7 wins tops. Well, they go around and they win 10. They win a bowl game. They finish 6th in the country. So now everybody's high on LSU. And Coach O still talks about blocking out the noise.
When we get back in August, it's about blocking out the noise. You know, when they talk bad about you, you can't listen. When they talk good about you, you still can't listen. You know, when they talk good, everybody wants to listen to it and start believing in it. That's when you get beat. We have to come back, focus on one game at a time, do the things that the LSU Tigers can do.
The most notable name on the LSU roster this year is Grant Delpit. Everybody has him as one of the top five players in all of college football and a surefire top draft pick. Here's Coach O talking about cut number eight, what he believes makes Grant Delpit special.
His awareness level. Think about the play he made against Georgia. He was rushing the kick. He felt the tight end leave. He stopped his rush, covered the tight end, and then caused the fumble from the kicker. Tremendous awareness play.
Tremendous, tremendous awareness. He went on even further, cut number six, when he made this declaration about Grant Delpit.
And then Grant Delpit. I think Grant Delpit is probably the best defensive player in America. We're going to use him. We're going to send him. Excellent player.
All right. Another excellent player that everybody's waiting for, and that's the return of Kalavon Chaisson, who got injured early, had to sit out the entire year. He was that pass rusher that LSU was missing, looking for. Here's the latest, Coach O, on Kalavon Chaisson.
You know, it gives Dave the flexibility to call more defenses that involve Kalavon. Obviously, we want him rushing, put him in different spots. He's a guy that you give him a one-on-one rush, he's going to win.
All right, he's going to win it. All right, everybody is fully confident, despite the losses of Devin White and Greedy Williams and others. Nobody seems to be worried about the defense. In Dave Aranda, we trust, is what the mantra seems to be, the wizard on the defensive side of the ball. So everybody wants to talk about offense. And Coach O, cut number five, gave a little snippet about the 11 when they have the ball.
It brings confidence to everybody, the fans, the coaching staff, the players. We're more advanced in offense right now than we've ever been. The addition of Joe Brady has been fantastic. Our recruiting class, I can't wait to see our receivers and our two young running backs. Our offensive line is going to get better. I'm excited about this team.
I love the fact that he's excited. So many people wondered how it would work. Steve Ensminger, Ed Orgeron's chosen man to run the offense. He brings in this young whippersnapper who came from the New Orleans Saints in Joe Brady. How would that relationship work? Well, here's Coach O talking about his two offensive brain trusts.
You know, Steve's getting old. He's like John Wayne, you know. He comes to work every day. He's tough. He's hard-nosed. Joe is young and energetic. We wanted to put in the spread. I talked to Steve about what we're doing. He's in total agreement. He wants us best at LSU. Those guys work tremendous together.
They work tremendous together, and they need to. And the good thing about Steve Ensminger, look, I was at school when Steve was in school. We used to hang out together. We used to have a beer or two together. Absolutely. And he loves LSU. And the good thing that Steve has grown and matured at, in all of his time, he has no ego anymore. He knows this is his last hurrah. He just wants what's best for LSU, and he wants to win. And that's what he knows is best. And he wants LSU fans to finally stop talking about this Neanderthalic offense that LSU has seemed to have forever and a day, ever since Charlie Mack was roaming the sidelines. He wants to bring it into the new age and beyond, and that's what Joe Brady is going to do. It always helps when you have a quarterback, and for the first time in a long time, it seems like there is a trust among the LSU fans, the fan base, the players, the staff in Joe Burrow. And here's Coach O, cut 11, talking about what Joe Burrow brings to the table.
Our team knows about Joe. We're able to do more things at the line of scrimmage with Joe. We have put in a brand new offense, under spread offense. It's something that tailors to Joe's skill level. I think he's going to have a hell of a year.
More about the spread offense, cut 14. Here's Coach O talking about this new look that we're going to see very, very soon. I froze up a little bit. When I rattle them off like this, my poor boy is back there pushing buttons, and sometimes the machine just doesn't want to cooperate. But we're all anxious to see it. I really believe for the first time, we will see it, and we will believe it. We've been told this song and dance before, but it's never come into fruition. But Joe Brady comes along, and now we have a chance. And we'll shift over to Joe Brady now, cut number two. So you're with the Saints. You're in the NFL. Why in the Sam Hill did you come to LSU?
You know, every job I've always had, I've kind of always had my head, you know, where my butt is. Like, I've never thought about what the next job, just take care of, you know, the job at hand. But this opportunity to me to coach an elite program, you know, elite, you know, group of receivers, and be able to put my stamp on the offense, to me it was an opportunity that I didn't think I could turn down. And that I'm fortunate for, I'm grateful for, and, you know, I've enjoyed it every single bit of it.
Clint, can you help me here for a second? Did he just say, my head is where my butt is?
I guess it's what he said. I have no idea what it means, but, you know, that's what he said.
He said, I'll have to ask him about that next time I see him. Joe, your head is what? Okay, all right, whatever. All right, but look, he talked about speed in space, okay? Cut number three. Speed, that's something you just can't coach.
Look, the thing about LSU is they're always going to have speed. You know, and it's our job as coaches to put our speed in space and allow them to win their one-on-ones. You know, the type of athletes we have at LSU, I think they're going to make us look good. So if we can utilize, you know, tempo to our advantage, allow defense to have to defend every blade of grass, you know, I think in getting our speed in space, you know, I think that allows us to have the most success.
I love them already. I do. How many times have we been begging for that? Speed in space. And if you've got speed in space, cut number four, you're going to get rid of the ball, and it's not going to be a pass rush, and Joe Burrow is going to be upright.
Football's football. I mean, you're going to run the same type of schemes. But I think what we're trying to do is, look, we're trying to get the ball out fast, get the ball in space, and when we want it, we can take shots. Look, at LSU, we're always going to take shots down the field. You know, but we're going to be a diverse offense. Look, what you see in New Orleans, you're going to see Drew get the ball out fast. You're going to see him push the ball down the field, and look, we're looking to do the same type of stuff. Play action, quick game, drop back, utilize our running backs, utilize our tight ends, get our running backs the ball in space and the pass game. You know, so from that standpoint, without studying a lot of college football in the past couple of years, you know, I'm not sure exactly who to compare it to.
I love you even more, Joe Brady. Get it out of the hands of the get it to the wide receivers, get it to the tight end, utilize your talent, get it to them quickly, and let them make plays. I absolutely love it. And finally, we heard Coach O talk about the quarterback. Here's Joe Brady talking about Joe Burrow.
I want to run through a wall for Joe Burrow. I love his moxie. I think everybody on that football team, he makes everybody on that football team better. You know, I think I talked about this earlier, but, you know, in New Orleans, I think every single game you watch Drew Brees walk up, walk into the huddle, you know, before the game, and everybody in that stadium in that huddle believes that we have a chance to win because of Drew Brees, and I think we have that here at LSU. Joe Burrow, you know, is exactly what you're looking for in the quarterback. He has that moxie, he has that makeup. You know, as a coach, you know, you're fired up knowing that Joe's your quarterback, and I think everybody on that team backs him, loves him, works for him, and, you know, I know every single time we step on the field this fall, we got opportunity to win with Joe Burrow.
Wow. Man. You fired up yet, Tiger fans? You fired up? Finally, one last soundbite before we take it to break. Back to Coach O. Look, he has seen the worst of times. He's seen some of the best of times throughout his career. So he's got a lot to base things on. And with cut number 12, it just bodes well for the way the coach feels about his program.
Thank you. I feel confident. I feel confident about recruiting. I know the job that our staff is doing. I think I have the best staff I've ever assembled, but the chemistry is right. The synergy when we go to work. We're all on the same page. Our players love going to work. They're in good condition. Now, we know the schedule's going to be challenging and stuff like that, but, you know, the expectations are high at LSU, but that's what you want. That's the school that I always wanted to be with. The expectation is to win the national championship. I understand that.
Darn right you do. Not going to be that long. Look, talk about in shape. Cardale Thomas committed to LSU in 2016. He was told he was going to have to lose some weight. If you look at pictures of him then and look at pictures of him now, holy cow. Please, please let me get into that program. Does he look good? Oh, it's going to be a good year. Telling you. Look out, Crimson Tide. We coming. We coming. And we're coming back after this break here on the Jordy Helpert Show.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Helpert Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Yeah, yeah. Welcome back. Tuesday edition, 33 minutes after the hour. We listened to some sound bites from the LSU coaches' caravan in New Orleans yesterday. Brody Miller, I'm sure, was there joining us now. I want to get some thoughts on some of the things he heard, some of the things he saw. Brody, good afternoon, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Jordy?
I'm doing great. You don't sound enthusiastic today, man. You all right? Need a pep talk?
Goodness,
you
okay? No, that's on me. No, I'm in a great mood. How are you?
Come on now. You got to bring it with me. I'm always good. Always energetic. So how energetic was Steve Ensminger? He seems to be very comfortable in his shoes where he is now in his career at this point in time. Do you get that same sense?
Absolutely. Even if you just compared it to this exact event a year ago, or even him talking at the bowl game in like New Year's. I mean, you could just see a difference. And granted, last year there was the uncertainty of, you know, this all this pressure of being a first-year OC here, and then there's the bowl game. Those are different scenarios, of course. But I think there's definitely a more of a lightness and just more of a, like you said, a comfortability. And I think some of that is, hey, he's got a year under his belt. I think that matters. But I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm reaching too far here, but I really think a lot of it comes from this whole new Joe Brady dynamic that when it happened, there was a lot of potential for it to turn into almost like an issue or like a rift. But I don't think that's how either of those two guys work. And I think, in all honesty, Steve Ensminger is kind of loving it because he just gets to do the parts of coaching that he loves, but he's not an ego guy. He loves what Joe Brady's bringing, it seems like, at least. I think the best example of kind of the different mood he was in is the first thing he sat down and said to us. He had a big smile on his face, which is rare to begin with around us. And he said, hey, I brought Joe Brady here so I wouldn't have to answer any of these questions. You know, it kind of got a good laugh. But I think that is the perfect metaphor for just how that yesterday went, in that sense that, you know, everyone there knows Joe Brady's kind of becoming the scheme guru, and Steve Ensminger is kind of the overseer and the final play caller.
And that's great that can coexist, because in many, many organizations, egos run rampant, especially in the coaching world. And in many, many places, that just wouldn't fly. So when Coach O says he thinks he's got his best staff he's ever had assembled, maybe not with all the skins on the wall, but as far as a chemistry is concerned, people want to work together. That certainly wasn't the case very, very, not too very long ago. Not to throw people under the bus, but with Matt Canada, I mean, the stories and the reports and the rumors were rampant on how just divided that staff was. And divide the staff, you divide the team, you're not going to win.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's a great comparison. And yeah, exactly. I think it's true. I think, I don't know how many scenarios this would work, you know, but I think it comes down to Steve Ensminger. And this is something I had heard back, you know, last summer when I was doing a big profile on Ensminger. It's something I heard when this Joe Brady hire became announced. I kept trying to talk to people about Ensminger. Mm-hmm. And one thing that just always came up was just, yeah, no, he really genuinely just sincerely doesn't have that kind of ego. And he just, you know, I think he loves LSU, and all the stories have come out about how he almost didn't even take this job a year and a half ago because, you know, he just doesn't need that. And I don't think that's something that drives him. So I really do think it's kind of a, I kind of lost my train of thought there. But yeah, I think it works. And I was the one who asked, you know, and the thing I said, hey, so everyone says you don't have an ego. Do you agree with that? And he literally laughed. He says, no, I really don't have an ego at all. So I really think that's the reason. And then you combine that with a 29-year-old guy who everyone knows is a shooting star in the coaching world. I mean, that's the consensus. Other SEC schools were looking at him, the Saints countered to keep him. And people are in on Joe Brady, but he'll also be the first to tell you he's never called plays before. You know, he's never actually had a job like this. So he's also not somebody. I mean, I think he's somebody with a lot of aspirations, and he's got a big ego like anyone. Yeah. I think he's gonna, and you know, even by next year, he could be calling plays somewhere. But I think he at least has the self-awareness to be like, hey, one, I think he and Steve genuinely get along. Two, to know, like, hey, I haven't done this yet. I can't come in here like some hotshot and be like, this is my world. I think there's genuinely a respect there that they have something to learn from each other. And, you know, a lot of this, obviously, you know, these are things that can sound rosy in June and then real life might change them in a few months, and I'm prepared for that. But as of now, I genuinely believe these two get along.
I think... call me whatever you want to call me. I think, you know, Steve Ensminger is not going to be coaching all this. I think Ed Orgeron would love to stay here for a long, long time. I don't think Steve has much that he wants to do. I think he wants to accomplish something, and if and when that does happen, he'll step aside. And I think if Joe Brady proves to be what everyone has, it appears he could be, I mean, that could be a stepping stone for him, and what a feather in his cap at a very young age to possibly be the offensive coordinator there.
I know. I think that's going to be such a fascinating thing to follow next, you know, I don't know, January, if LSU has the kind of offensive season you expect, and you know, if they can be at least top half of the SEC and just kind of show some real progress there. I'm just fascinated to see what things look like for Joe Brady in the year, because, yeah, one, there's that underlying thing that everyone likes to speculate that he might be the offensive coordinator. I'm not going to go out of my limb fighting that by any means. But then also really fascinating, like we said, so many people are in on him as like a shooting star in coaching. I'm fascinated to, like, say hypothetically, this is getting so far ahead of ourselves, but say hypothetically he had a great
year. Oh, I love it. I love it. Bring it to me.
I'd be fascinated to see who else comes calling after him. You know what I mean? So it's going to be something really interesting to follow, but obviously first half of this football this year.
It all depends on what this offense looks like and what kind of numbers they put up. The thing that I loved more than anything, and I've always been a proponent of this, and I don't know, you know, he's forgotten more football than I could ever even begin to know, but I know this. If you have athletes in any sport, if you get the ball to them quickly in an area where they have some freedom of movement, things are going to go well. And how many times in the past have we seen LSU with running backs in to block, to protect the quarterback, and two receivers out being covered by five defensive backs, and you wonder why the quarterback can't get rid of the ball, and you wonder why there's sacks, and you wonder why you're scrambling for your life. I loved when he said, we're going to block with five, we're going to send five out, we're going to get them in space, we're going to get the ball out in a hurry, and we're going to let them be athletes. Thank you.
Exactly. And I think the big thing is also that you combine everything you just said, and you might have touched on this, I might have missed it, but also the idea that I think they're getting away from, I think one of Jerry Sullivan's big thing was, and this isn't a criticism of him, he's, you know, one of the most respected coaches in football, but I think he was big on, you know, each receiver has a specific role, and, you know, a play is designed for this, you know, it's primarily designed for this one person to get over, open, and then maybe a second person, but kind of a structured system. And that thing has kind of came out in this whole offseason while this change has been happening. But Joe Brady, very different in that sense, you know, and it goes exactly what you're saying, that he wants every receiver to be able to play every spot. He doesn't want it to be, this is your role, this is their role. And every guy is going to like you to free-flowing, you know, offense. And I think that's going to be another just huge change, is that you're going to see an offense that actually allows, it's not just that you have four or five wide, it's that you have four or five wide guys that actually are targets. And I don't want to oversimplify it, but I don't exactly think that was the case last year. And I think that's going to be a huge thing. And it's also going to free some of these receivers up to kind of grow and evolve more, one would think.
Yeah, and that just, when you have that, I've said this before, it's all about style of play. You hear it on every level, even the professional level, with free agents. I want to go where the style of play is this, because it's going to make and bring out the best in me. It's going to evolve my career. You get skill position people now, running backs, you see this where they have a chance to touch the ball, and there's, as Joe Brady says, everybody eats. You know, we're not going to just be Michael Thomas. We're going to zoom all over the place. Everybody's happy. Everybody runs hard on every play because they think, man, I may get the ball this play. It just makes sense, man. It just does.
Yeah, I mean, it's like people wonder why the Warriors have created one of the best basketball teams of all time. And sure, of course, it comes with the talent. But I think what made all these guys turn into superstars was they built a system where everybody ate, everybody loved playing together. They were all helping each other score. And in turn, everybody was scoring. It created this perfect basketball team. It might be apples and oranges, but I think there is a lot of similarity there. And you're already seeing it in recruiting. They haven't even played a game yet, but they're selling all of this whole new kind of receiver system, all these new things you're going to see in the passing game. You're seeing, they're selling that to all these star receivers. LSU has, you know, probably tied with, I forget what I was off the top of my head, forgive me, but I think it was Ohio State, but they are pretty much neck and neck for the best receiving core, receiving recruiting class in the country right now, with some of these guys like Hakeem Jarrett and Kayshon Boutte. And just, it's a loaded class. And I think you're already seeing that happen. I think people want to be a part of that. And so much of the star talent on this roster is still so young that, yeah, the sky's the limit there. And I think everything you're saying is dead on.
I think Brody Miller, the Advocate, kind of have to join us. Steve Ensminger said last year that the strength of this team was going to be the wide receiver core. And I went, what? They didn't really live up to it. But now I'm hearing reports Terrence Marshall's made great progress. He very highly recruited. I'm waiting to see if the, you know, Jamar Chase, he had some brief moments where the light came on. Justin Jefferson. There's a whole bunch of big-time recruits. Now they just got to perform. But, man, if they live up to the billing, maybe they could be the strength.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny. If you really go back and analyze that answer he gave last year, which, I mean, I'm with you, it was a weird answer, but I think that was so telling of And Steve actually even gives him credit. He basically said that all day last year when we talked to him about it. And it was like, I mean, that was more telling of how many unknowns were going on with this football team. That they didn't know who their quarterback was. They didn't know half their offensive line. They didn't know who their starting running back would be. They only had half the offense installed. I think they had no idea what this team was going to look like. So they looked at their roster and it was just like, wow, the only thing that we actually know is like genuinely talented right now. It's the receivers. And yeah, I mean, I don't know if underperform is the right word, but yeah, it didn't like break out like some people thought or anything like that.
No,
but,
that's the right word. That is the right word. Yes.
And I think now you're seeing, you know, Justin Jefferson did break out. He deserves credit for that. Terrace Marshall wasn't quite healthy, we found out later. So I think he's somebody who, at least that's what they're saying. They're saying he looks like a different guy from a health point of view. Jamar Chase did come into his own at the end of the season. I mean, those last few weeks, he showed glimpses of being that guy. And I think a lot of that was just genuine freshman growing pains mixed with, I think, Jerry Sullivan. Like we're saying, with his system, I think it takes receivers a little longer to learn that. I think this year will be a little more simple. So, yeah, I mean, those three guys right there, that's a pretty star-studded receiving core. And it's not like those 4, 5, 6, 7 guys are exactly slouches. I mean, those are guys, your D. Andersons, your Derek Dillons, your John Trey Kirklands, and you got those freshmen like Devonta Lee and Trey Palmer. I mean, that's a loaded receiving core, yeah. So,
No doubt about it.
And if you mix that, like what you're saying with that, if you mix out that free-flowing receiving core, where things are just going to kind of be, everyone's going to be eating. I mean, there's so much potential there, absolutely.
It really is. I see a picture of Cardell Thomas from what he looked like in 2016. He looked like a big old pulling guard, and now he looks like he could be a rush linebacker. Man, is he trimmed down. That's unbelievable, the body transformation. I hope he's still an offensive lineman.
I know, we didn't get a firm weight back on him, but I mean, he's been pretty consistently posting how much weight he's losing, and that's absolutely the big concern with him. I mean, you ask any of those recruiting guys, you know 24/7 Sports or Rivals.com, they'll tell you the track record for offensive linemen out of high school weighing more than, 330 pounds that have success, it's really low. It's genuinely low. And those guys just don't turn into the players they, I don't know, maybe used to be, it might be the right term, but it doesn't look good. But I think if Cardell Thomas comes in with the shape he's in, I mean, yeah, he has massive potential. And one thing I asked Steve Ensminger, last night was just, hey, like, what is the expected, production of a freshman offensive lineman? Because that is, one of the most physical positions on the field. Do you expect somebody to be able to come in and be able to just be ready, or is there more of a learning curve there? And he said, yeah, there's definitely a learning curve, but one thing that's, they feel way more. One of the guys' summer workouts going right now, and she's somebody they've been kind of talking to for so long. I think they're optimistic that somebody like Cardell Thomas can, maybe not start or anything like that day one, but at least not be too far behind, just because they like where they're at in terms of implementation and whatnot right now. And he obviously has the physical tools.
Brody Miller from The Advocate joining us here, the Jordy Helfberg Show, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Ensminger mentioned the wide receiver core a year ago as the strength. Is the offensive line the point of concern heading into this season?
Absolutely, yeah. I can say pretty confidently. I mean, I'm not going to – there's always a chance things can get better. I mean, when you look back to the past, 20 years of data in college football, one of the best metrics for success is just returning starts in the offensive line. I mean, it's even more so than productivity. I think that's actually a huge indicator of what teams have success. So, I mean, yeah, they're bringing so many starts back and so many snaps back. That's a huge thing. So maybe I'll be proved wrong, but I don't know if I see an offensive line that's going to make some massive jump. I don't think they're going to get worse by any means, but one, that's tough. But second, yeah, I mean, you do have Sadiq Charles more healthy this year. You do have, Lloyd Cushenberry and Damian Lewis. Those are two pretty good linemen. I'll never argue that. But, Sadiq Charles really has to improve from last year. Right tackle is still just a glaring hole right now. And then left guard, I don't know if it's a concern or so, but that's still an open competition. I think they like Jason Hines there. And obviously Cardell Thomas and guys like Anthony Bradford will compete, and Adrian McGee as well. But yeah, I just don't know if that's a position that, you can really count on to be anything special. I guess if I'm going to play devil's advocate, though, what I'll say is, one thing about this kind of, you know, RPO system and Joe Brady's offense is, if in theory it works like they hope, one of the beauties of that system is it does take pressure away from the offensive line. It's reading what the defense is doing, making a quick decision to go where they're not. So if they can follow through on that and really operate, like you said, on five guys going out and five guys blocking, then, yeah, some of the pressure comes off that offensive line. You know, it is funny how much better an offensive line can look when its offense is helping it.
Yes.
That's what makes football a fun sport to analyze, because every piece affects the other. But it's a long answer to your question. That's definitely the biggest question mark this offseason.
Last question. We'll let you get out of here. You get a pulse of things. Was it a packed house at the Caravan in New Orleans?
I wouldn't say packed house or anything like that, but I mean, it was a good crowd. Yeah, I've been able to go to, I think, three of the five Caravan events, and I think you actually saw some of the biggest crowds in some of those towns like Shreveport and Monroe and Houma and whatnot. Okay. I think you saw some really good crowds there, because they don't get to be exposed to it as much, to be honest with you. New Orleans crowd was good. I don't think it was anything crazy. It's also the middle of summer, so I'm curious. But, yeah, it was a good crowd, though.
There's Zion fever. Everybody's looking for Zion. Nobody cares about Coach O yet. Everybody's looking for Zion.
Absolutely. That's a good point. Tell me a basketball fan, I suppose.
Brody, thank you, buddy. I greatly appreciate your time, man. Enjoy the rest of your summer, buddy. It's coming sooner than later, buddy. So take care.
I know. Thank you for having me. Take care.
All right. Brody Miller of The Advocate. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll wrap up hour number one, set the stage for hour number two, the Jordy Helfer Show. Joe Brady, love you, man. Now, this just make it happen when it counts. When you play the Crimson Tide, spread them out. Don't let that pass rush get Joe Burrow. Get five out. Boom, 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 boom. As Hank Stram would say, matriculate the ball down the field. Oh, you'll be a hero. We'll be right back.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the app.
All right, 55 minutes after the hour, quick wrap-up of hour number one. I thought it was great. They did a behind-the-scenes of Zion Williamson arriving in New Orleans. He checks into his hotel room. It looks like, because I've been there, it looks like the Ritz-Carlton right there on Canal Street. And he walks in and he looks to the left, and there is a big picture of a framed autographed jersey of Drew Brees with a note. He signed it, and the note says, "Welcome to New Orleans. Let's dance." And Zion's all smiling. I said, man, I need to patent that thing. That's going to be the new one. Let's dance. So Drew Brees, again, showing the leadership and showing, look, again, he needs to sit down with Drew Brees, and they need to talk, and I know they will. And he kind of needs to give him the lay of the land, what it's like. Because Drew Brees came from San Diego, didn't know a thing about New Orleans. He came over, and, boy, he got involved, and now look at him. It's just remarkable what he has done and how much the fan base absolutely adores him. And Zion can be the same. Can Zion turn New Orleans into hoop heaven? Can he do it? Why can't the two exist? Of course they can. Of course they can. Look what the Boston Celtics revered in that city. So are the New England Patriots. Revered. Absolutely they can. So, could be a great setup. So, Zion getting the autographed pick of Drew Brees with the Let's Dance. You got to love that. You got to love it. Hour number two of the program. We're 66 days away from the start of the college football season for the Raging Cajuns. 66. Year two of Billy Napier. His right-hand man in the sports information department is Patrick Crawford. We'll sit down and meet Patrick Crawford. And what's it like working with Billy Napier? Is he always that cool, calm, and collected? And free agency in the NBA right around the corner, Grant Hughes' Bleacher Report will join us. What do the Pels do next? With David Griffin, stir in the drink. Hour number two, straight ahead. The Jordy Helfrich Show, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game. Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Yes, indeed. Hour number two of two, and away we go. A busy Tuesday, this 25th day of June. We've got UL football to talk about, NBA basketball to talk about, but we always get things started as we do with our daily walk around the sports water cooler. It's hour number two, so let's hit that button, please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
My main man, whose head is not where his butt is, Clint Domain, joins us now. Good afternoon, my friend.
Good afternoon, Jordy. That is definitely not where my head is, but I have to say I'm interested in what's going down right now in the NBA because reports come out just in the last, let's say, 10 minutes or so. Kristaps Porzingis could be receiving a five-year, $158 million offer with the Dallas Mavericks, Jordy. Is Kristaps Porzingis really worth that much?
In today's NBA, sorry to say, yes. Yes, he's a franchise type of player. He's a big seven-footer that can shoot from outside. Of course, he's coming off a major, major injury, but they're hoping that medical technology and youth are on his side. And, heck, Mark Cuban's a billionaire. He can afford that. That's chump change.
It's amazing, Jordan, to see how much money they're going to be willing to throw at Kristaps Porzingis, but you have to about imagine that's going to be the most international team in the NBA right now because you've got Kristaps Porzingis and you've got the rookie of the year, Luka Doncic. This team looks really good.
Yeah.
If they can get him, of course, it's going to be
– not bad.
They have to wait a little while to get that to be official.
Yeah, they need some. They need a couple more pieces to the puzzle. But look, they won a championship with Dirk, and Porzingis is the closest thing to Dirk. So Mark Cuban trying to go to the well again and see if he can bring one more title to Big D.
Oh, it's going to be awesome to see if perhaps they can wind up trying to make a run. And it just feels like, you know, we talk about the Pelicans and how much potential they have to make the postseason. This is something me and Ben talked about a lot in depth yesterday, but I want to throw it your way as well, Jordy. Do you think we could wind up seeing the New Orleans Pelicans on the outside looking in, being that 9 or 10 seed? Or do you still think they can wind up probably sneaking into the playoffs as an 8 seed?
It's so early to tell. I got to see what happens in free agency. There's too many pieces. There's too many holes to fill in this roster right here, right now. But if you kept the roster as it is and added nobody else, they're not making the playoffs. And I hate to sound like Jim Mora. Playoffs?
Playoffs?
We talking playoffs? No, not with that roster. Unless all of a sudden the light goes on and you get out of Tinseltown, you come to the Big Easy, and now Lonzo Ball is doing unbelievable things, and Brandon Ingram is 10 times better, and Zion Williamson, I mean, God bless him, if he lives up to the unreachable height that's on his broad shoulders. My guy, and Jahlil Okafor stays injury free. There's so many question marks, but right here, right now, no way they make the playoffs. No, I don't care. I don't care. Kevin Durant's hurt. Klay Thompson's hurt. No, they're not making it. Not right now.
I love it, Jordy. I love it. And of course, some things came out yesterday that I kind of was like right after we went off the air, Jordy, was about the NFL. There was a scientific study put out about the annual rankings of the league's best fan bases, best based on economic and marketing theory, whatever all that means. Okay. And I want you to take a wild guess.
Yeah.
Who would be at the top of that list?
The best fan base?
Yeah, in terms of this scientific study.
The Patriots.
They were second, Jordy.
second. God, don't tell me the Raiders with that bunch of fanatics.
No, I think they're actually, let me see. Yeah, they're towards the middle of the pack, Jordy. It's the Dallas Cowboys.
Well, God. Well, look, they do travel everywhere. There's some teams, Dallas, yeah. Pittsburgh, no matter where you go, they're there. They're there. So, okay. When's the last time Dallas won a championship? Oh, I'm just saying.
I mean, I think the last time they won that, I think VHS was in, Betamax was on the rise, Jordy, you know.
Didn't Dirk Nowitzki and the Mavericks win a title before sooner than the Cowboys did? I believe so.
Yeah, that sounds about
so. Anyway.
That sounds about right, Jordy. Like I said, I think the last time they won it was back when VHSs were in style.
Oh, you don't use yours anymore? I still have my tapes. I still have Top Gun playing in that one. Come on.
You got a little constant looping in the Jordy Holtberg abode.
Absolutely. I'm not about to unplug it, because if I unplug it, everything goes haywire. Are you kidding me? You know me and my electronic savviness. Yeah. Come on.
I love it, Jordy. I absolutely love it. But yeah, it's just amazing to me that we have the Cowboys, of course, top of the list, and the Saints, they round out the top 10, actually, which is kind of crazy when you think about it. It feels like they should be a lot higher when you look at some of the other franchises, like the Chicago Bears, even the New York Giants. It feels like we should be higher than those guys.
Yeah. Well, obviously, whoever did this survey has never been to the Superdome on a Monday night or a Sunday night or a late Sunday afternoon. They've never been there to see what it's all about. So seeing is believing. Being a part of it is believing. You can do all the stats you want and all that stuff. Ask other teams how tough it is to come to the Superdome and win. That's all I care about.
Exactly. That's all that really matters, Jordy. And, you know, last night we had the NBA Awards. And, of course, Giannis Antetokounmpo wound up winning the whole thing, winning the MVP for the first time ever after Kobe Bryant let out a challenge for him to win MVP a few years ago. Now he has a new challenge for him, Jordy, championship. Can the Bucks be one of those teams to try and be the next big thing and hoist the Larry O'Brien trophy based off the current makeup?
Well, they got the player, the MVP. They got the coach of the year. If they're savvy in free agency, I don't see why not. I mean, if Toronto can do it. But look, you saw some weaknesses in Giannis in his game and how they defended him. He needs some more help, needs some more shooters. There's your Hot Topics for the day, brought to you by the best hot sauce every day, and that's Cajun Chef. Do yourself a flavor. Bring a small bottle of Cajun Chef, or bring a big bottle of Cajun Chef hot sauce wherever you go. Everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. Back, UL football, next.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers, and it's right here on the Jordy Holtberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
And we welcome you back. This is the Jordy Holtberg Show, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. It's hard to believe 66 days from now, the Raging Cajun will be teeing it up in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome against Mississippi State, a game on ESPNU. 66 days away. That's not far at all. I wonder if our next guest is ready, because Patrick Crawford is Billy Napier's right-hand man. He is part of the Sports Information Department of the Raging Cajuns, in charge of football. And Patrick's kind enough to join us. Patrick, when I said 66 days, did a little nervousness come over you? Are you okay?
You know, your heart rate starts to go up, I think, the closer to July it gets every summer, because you kind of try to, everybody in college athletics attempts to, at least, to kind of unplug at some point during the summer. The month of June and parts of July are where you attempt to get away. That's when a lot of coaches take their vacations with their families. That's where, you know, your athletic department will sort of hit the reset button every year. Mm-hmm. But really, once it gets to July, you've got to start having your ducks in a row. For our point, you know, we'd have all our Raging Cajuns initiatives starting to hit into a row here, and because before you know it, it'll be August. Football camp will be back in swing. We'll be getting everybody excited and ready to go to pack it into, well, first off, you know, our first game of the year starts off in the Superdome, which is really exciting. But the weekend right after that, we're in back at Cajun Field. So really, it's before you know it, we're going to blink and it's going to be here. And but thanks for having me on today, Jordy.
My pleasure. Stupid question, but I was told there's no such thing. Are media guides still prevalent, or is everything kind of done digitally now?
Well, you know, if you really want to get into the nuts and bolts, and I can bore all your listeners about how college athletics, media relations, and sports information has changed over the years. I'm a relatively young whippersnapper in the business. Yeah. I'm only 31 years old, and so for me, a media guide has never been much of a useful thing to me as much as it was just something that we did to make sure that all, you know, all the reporters had what they needed. But on the flip side of that, if you're able to do a good job of keeping your website up to date, which is its own animal to tackle, you want to make certain that reporters and your radio folks and your TV people have something in hand, whether it's on whether it is a book, whether it's or it's a website, or it's on an iPad in front of them. You want to make sure people stay up to date on how to cover the team and what, you know, where everybody's born, what their favorite food is, you know, all that jazz that you can find inside a media guide.
Patrick Crawford, Assistant Director of Athletics for Communications and Digital Strategy for the Raging Cajuns. That's a long business card right there, my friend. But one of the reasons I wanted to get you on, you have some diversity. I mean, you graduated from Iowa State. You cut your teeth there. You went to the SEC with Arkansas. Then you go to Rutgers. Then you come back. You spent 5 or 6 years at Missouri, and now you're in Lafayette, in Acadiana, with the Raging Cajuns. I'm kind of curious as to, from all your past places, and you've seen the fan bases at Arkansas and Missouri and Iowa State are tremendous for their athletic departments. What do you sense in your short time? You get to the Cajuns in April of 2018. What do you sense out of the community and the draw, particularly with the Billy Napier and what he has done so far and how this fan base is reacting to it?
I think there's a lot of positive momentum with our athletics department. And, I've been a whole bunch of places so far. But the thing that really stands out when you look at a brand that is the Raging Cajuns is there is no such other example in all of college athletics that compares. Yeah. Everybody knows who the Raging Cajuns are. It may take a random college fan or sports fan a second to think of somebody, but if you remind them, oh, well, you know, Jake Delhomme, he was their quarterback back in the day, or do you remember Brandon Stokely? Or if they're a big college baseball fan, you know, you'll say Tony Robichaux, and they know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And if you're an NBA fan, someone has probably heard of Elfrid Payton and how good of a point guard he is. And so there's a lot of little pieces in the sports world that have a Raging Cajun flair to them. And I've been here in Lafayette for 14 months now, and the town is great. The athletic department, we have made tremendous strides over the last year or so. I mean, and the administration with Dr. Maggard running the show so far, I think he's probably close to being in his third year as director of athletics so far. And just there's always more we can do, and we hear from fans of, well, do this, do that. We want to see this at Cajun Field, or we want to see this at the Cajun Dome. We've only scratched the surface of what, and I think a lot of fans would agree with us, that we've only scratched the surface of what we'll be able to accomplish here. And there's always room to grow. There's things to learn from in the past. But in my time here so far, it's been great.
Patrick Crawford, kind enough to join us, a wealth of experience in a very young age. as you bounced around the globe pursuing your career and furthering your career, you're kind of close to Billy Napier. What's mm-hmm. going on with the football program as we speak? 66 days away, so I know there's a lot of strength and conditioning going on right now.
Yeah, so what the really from Billy's background, he's had the ability to kind of mold and shape what he wants his off-season program to look like. Really, if you were to ask him to lay out the entire plan for a college football season, and when you would go to a football coach and say the college football season, he would probably give you a 365-day plan, because there's not much of it that is not planned out. And right now they have it all split up into phases, and they are currently in the regimen phase of their training. And if you hear the word regimen, you think, oh, well, they're probably really getting after it. And that's kind of the genesis of it. They are working on their mobility. They're working on their strength. It's not just throwing weights around, because there's a lot more that goes into being a great football player. And if you were to look at me and say, well, Patrick definitely doesn't know what a great football player looks like, and that's true, because I'm almost 5'4", 5'5", and definitely not a football player. But I watch a lot of football, so we're all experts here. And what they're really working on is their explosiveness, their ability to read plays. A lot of it is film study here when they're away from the weight room, or they're away from the practice field where they're working on their drills. If you were to watch it right now, you wouldn't see a football very often.
Right. Amazing. Patrick Crawford, kind enough to join us. Billy Napier, I've talked to him a few times. Don't really know him that well. And rightly so. He's a very busy man, but he's all business. Do you ever see him let his guard down? Is he ever non-business like around you?
He has a plan. He's a man that knows. He was very well prepared to step into a head coaching role. Really, at a young age, he is. Let me think about this. He's probably 39. I had to wager, okay. He's 38 or 39, and. He was prepared. He was probably as prepared as many of the candidates that were floating out there that could have had an opportunity to be the next Raging Cajuns football coach. He had learned early on in his career from Dabo Sweeney at Clemson, and he also learned to fail. He would be the first one to tell you that his tenure at Clemson did not end well, and he needed to dust himself off and keep learning and keep growing, and that's where he ended up at Alabama. With, I think the guy in college football that everybody's chasing, Nick Saban, and he learned a lot about what the process is that they've implemented there with that machine that is Crimson Tide football. So, and then, he's been a couple other places also. He was at Colorado State for a season. He was at Arizona State for a season. So all along the way there, he's picked out things he likes, picked out, how did this program fail? How did this program succeed? And you can watch and see there's little mannerisms that he's picked up from all the head coaches that he's worked for. And, and I like that he's all business.
Yeah.
He unfortunately finds a few too many times to riff on me a couple too many times, but I make it easy too often. But he's also a young enough guy where a lot of where we live and play now from a communication standpoint in athletics is in the social sphere. It's in the digital sphere. Mm-hmm. So he's really helpful in that regard. He's active on social media from a recruiting point of view. He gives us good input on the types of things we should be attempting to do to reach fans better, to reach recruits better. And really that's all you can ask for from a head coach. He's really dialed into it. And he doesn't let it consume his day, because that's what we're all here for, myself and our office, and our videographers and our photographer and all that. But he's very helpful and dialed into it.
One more before we let you get out of here. I greatly appreciate your time, Patrick Crawford. He'll be the liaison for the media and the fans with the Raging Cajun football program. You start off at Mississippi State and kind of a neutral site, but really – It's a great venue for Raging Cajun fans. And I notice on the schedule there's no more of those, we got to go to Athens, Georgia, or we have to go to Tuscaloosa, or we have to go to Gainesville. I like the fact that you're not doing those, I hate to call it what it is, those money games. I like this aspect. Your biggest trip is to Athens, Ohio, and that's in September. Then in the bulk of your schedule, you got three games on ESPNU, one on ESPN2. So that kind of bodes well. I love the plan. I love the course that this program's going in.
Oh, I think so, and I think fans. I'm learning to be. I'm only 14 months in. Reminder: I'm still learning to be as much of a Cajun fan as I am just a Cajun employee. So what the fans can really look forward to, I think, is obviously they should be getting excited about that opportunity to go to the Superdome. I've managed to be there a few different points in my career, and it's so cool to be there for a football game. And the chance there, it's a nationally televised game. Make a weekend out of it. Go down to New Orleans, either spend Friday night or get up in the morning and come Saturday and spend the rest of the day there. I think that'll be very, very cool, and it's an opportunity. You know, from Louisiana's point of view, UL, how many times do you get a chance to go up against an SEC team, especially in a venue like the Superdome? I think fans can get excited for that. And then, you know, right after that, the next weekend, September 7th, we're back home opening up Cajun Field against Liberty.
Yeah. Back-to-back home games? Texas and Southern, really, and you go on the road. So
I think it's on the road.
Yeah. I think it's going to be fun. I really do. Look, if you have any problems with Napier getting on you, I did radio and television when Saban was at LSU. I'm telling you, I know how to handle him. If you need some advice, just give me a call. You got my number. We can talk about it. I'll help you. I'll guide you through the maze, okay?
Sometimes I think I need a helmet just as much as some of the football players do. Just to deflect everything.
Just remember, when they don't, that's when you're in trouble. All right, that's when you're in trouble. So welcome it and move on and learn from it. But Patrick, thank you, and you'll become a Cajun. Not only an employee, you'll become a Cajun fan sooner rather than later. I promise you. Thank you for your time, buddy. I appreciate it.
Helping 20.
Yes, indeed. Watch this freshman 20, big guy. Watch out. Watch out. Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you, Jordan.
All right, take care, buddy. That's Patrick Crawford, kind of inside the Raging Cajuns. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. Grant Hughes, NBA stuff next here on the Jordy Helpert Show.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Helpert Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
It's the league, the music that just keeps on giving and giving and giving. The NBA never slows down. Free agency right around the corner. Awards were given out last night. The Greek Freak is the MVP. Here to talk all about that and his opinion on the New Orleans Pelicans is our friend from the left coast, the feature writer of the NBA for Bleacher Report, Mr. Grant Hughes. Grant, I love that music, man. Can they bring that thing back? I love it.
Yeah, they don't make those intros like they used to. They do the video montages and stuff before the big, weekend games. I miss all that stuff, too.
Some people say they got it wrong. Some people say they got it right. What does Grant Hughes say about Giannis Antetokounmpo being named the MVP?
I'm good with it. I think, it's funny. It's one of those things that you haven't really thought about for a couple of months because it just kind of gets backburned during the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But when you go back and look at it, I mean, the simplest argument to me is that Giannis was, one of the very best offensive players in the league and was right up there for defensive player of the year, too. And, to me, that sort of gives him as strong a case as anybody, especially compared to someone like Harden, who really only contributes on one end, even though he did it at a level we've never really seen before. That's kind of my nutshell take on being okay with Giannis winning it. I do think that, you know, if Harden had won it, I wouldn't have been upset. I think either of them was deserving, and really no one else, to me, was in the conversation.
Yeah, I agree. It was a two-horse race, and I think they got it right personally. But I guess that's because Giannis had never won it before, and we'll see what happens. Does LeBron have one more left in him, you think?
You know, that's one of the most interesting things to look for this year, I think, because, you know, not that he's ever really needed motivation, but, you know, he wasn't in that conversation this year in terms of the MVP. And, like, when's the last time that happened? 2006? I mean, it's just been forever. So I think he's got another one if he can stay healthy. And assuming that the Lakers can put together a roster to fill out around their two-headed monster now.
Yeah, I mean, he's not even considered the best player on the planet anymore. I mean, if he's not motivated now, I mean, my goodness gracious. We'll see. I've got to ask you, since the draft has settled and we're approaching free agency, David Griffin and the thing. What did you think of the trade of Anthony Davis to the Lakers and what Griffin got back in return from it?
I don't know how you could have done a whole lot better, honestly. And the way I kind of think of it is, you know, in theory, the Pelicans weren't in a position where they should have had much leverage, right? Because the main piece you're trying to trade has advertised, asked out, has wanted out, is going to leave in a year 100%, with 100% certainty. And that's really not a situation where you should be able to, you know, make these extra demands of, you know, throw in some future pick swaps in addition to the first you're going to give us, Lakers. And no, you're not going to get away with just Ingram or just Ball. We want both. I mean, you know, compared to the other packages that were out there, compared to sort of the leverage you should have in that situation, I really thought that Griffin did a phenomenal job. I mean, I forget who it was. Somebody tweeted out just including after their other trade that they made with that number four pick, just the complete haul of assets that they got. And it's just, I mean, every team in the league would love to have this war chest of stuff, of young guys and picks and everything. So huge return. I think they did great.
Does this make, I mean, the Lakers ought to be pretty darn good, right? I mean, you got LeBron and Anthony Davis. I mean, I know they got to fill some other spots, but they, with what's happening in Golden State, they've got to be a team that's considered a contender in the West, or am I crazy?
No, I think that's the right first reaction. But then you brought up Golden State, and we saw what happens to a team that's built on stars and is a little top heavy. And the Lakers are, you know, you lose one guy, you lose two guys. You know, the Warriors are an exception; they had four All Stars. But let's say LeBron misses 30 games again, or let's say Davis, you know, something happens. The guys are going to sit around these guys unless they can get a third max player, which is, you know, unlikely, I would say. They're going to be working with some pretty limited resources. So that's the only caution I would have is you're built around two guys. You lose one, and I'm not sure what you have in terms of a competitive roster, unless they really just hit home runs in free agency, which after last year, I'm not real confident that they can do that.
You bring up free agency. You mentioned Durant. Going to probably miss an entire season. There's Kawhi Leonard. There's Kyrie Irving. With Durant's injury, does that diminish now what's happening? And do you still think teams are going to – see, we talked about this before. If I'm Durant, I sign one more year with Golden State. I try to get healthy and get ready for the playoffs and just reemerge and maybe go win a championship. Am I stupid?
Well, he's the hardest guy. I mean, he's been the hardest guy to figure out in terms of what he wants, you know? So I could see a short-term deal, especially since, you know, the risk of a short-term deal for someone like Durant is you get hurt and then no one's going to offer you multi-year deals. Well, everyone's ready to offer him a multi-year deal right now. So that concern doesn't seem to apply. I think the only thing that, you know, he may just want to go someplace new, because of the, you know, sort of the discomfort and sort of, you know, maybe he doesn't trust the training staff. That's pure speculation by me in terms of how he feels about Golden State. He may just want to get out of there and rehab really on, you know, on quiet terms in, say, Brooklyn or New York or something like that. But really, the main thing for Durant is all year it was a foregone conclusion he was gone, and he was gone to the Knicks, and it was going to be a max deal. And now I don't think we can be sure about any of those three things. So it's much more up in the air than it was before his injury.
It brought me back. I do a thing where I, on this day in sports history, and just a couple of days ago, we talked about LeBron James winning his first title, and it was against Oklahoma City when they had Westbrook, Durant, and Harden. If they had kept that group together in Oklahoma City, how do you think that would have played out, or would it be, was it impossible with too many of those alpha dogs on that team?
Yeah, I wonder if you see – I don't think it would be possible for Harden to have become what he is playing with someone like Westbrook specifically, who has the ball all the time. And then you got and Kevin Durant on. I just don't know where the shots would come from. So I think, you know, it's just, it's unbelievable to imagine. I mean, Serge Ibaka was on that team too, and when he was in his prime.
Yes.
I mean, the sheer talent was just overwhelming, and they really did miss the title window there, I think. But yeah, it's hard for guys to develop into superstars when there's only, you know, the old cliche, there's only so many touches. I don't know if they would have all become what they eventually did if they'd stayed together.
He is Grant Hughes, Bleacher Report, NBA feature writer. They've already got the billboards up in L.A. for Kawhi, the king of L.A. That who's more difficult to figure out, he or Durant?
Who's
more difficult?
I think Durant says so much that it's hard to figure him out, and Leonard is the opposite, where he never says anything, and so you can't possibly guess where his head's at. I still think he's going to go to the Clippers, talking about Leonard. But, I mean, Toronto really could not have possibly put together a better pitch. Everything from keeping him healthy to the parade. I mean, it all just went as good as it possibly could have gone for the Raptors, and it may not be enough in the end, but I can't imagine they could have thought of a way for this to have gone better for them in terms of having a chance to keep him.
The other name out there is Kyrie Irving. It seems like his stock is going downward wherever he goes. Am I wrong there?
No, and look, if you were an Irving detractor, which I guess I probably was a little bit of, I never thought he was a guy that could be the best player on a title team just because of his game and because of sort of some of the things you'd hear about how he handles teammates in the locker room stuff. And I think that's all just getting verified now, right? I think teams aren't afraid of, you know, he's not talented. It's not that. I think it's all the other stuff that if you're going to pay a guy to be your number one, you need to have some assurances that things kind of fall into line behind him. And what we saw with the Celtics this year suggests that that's just, you can't be sure of that with him.
I don't know him from a man on the moon. I just watch and I look at him. Here's a guy making millions upon millions of dollars, and he looks miserable. What? He's playing a game that we all love, and he's getting paid more money than you could ever imagine, and he's miserable. I just don't get it.
Yeah, I think you just need a steadiness from your top guy, and because that sets the tone for your team. And if you don't know if maybe he's going to be in a bad mood today for reasons you may never know, and he's going to be fine tomorrow – the lack of consistency, I think, is just, you know, it makes it difficult to hold a team together if you've got, you know, serious, you know, championship goals or whatever they may be.
Yes. Grant Hughes, Bleacher Report. Man, there's Zion mania in New Orleans. I've never seen anything quite like it, Grant. It's unbelievable.
No, I mean, the phenomenon itself is kind of, it's just grown to levels already that are hard to fathom, but I just watching him, I mean, you say you've never seen anything like it. Just watching him play, I've never seen anybody like it. That size, the ability of a guy that big to move like he does is just, it makes you think you're watching, I don't know, it's a cartoon or something. Like, I don't know what to expect from him night to night because physically, I just, like, what's the blueprint for this guy? I don't know what it is.
I'm with you. You pair him. You've got Jrue Holiday. You got Lonzo Ball. I'm not so sure about Brandon Ingram. What is your take on Brandon Ingram? I'm very curious.
Yeah, it's different than Ball, where you can look at Ball and say he's got these flaws, but there are certain things that he clearly does really well. You know, he's a great passer, great defender, has just great instincts. That kind of stuff jumps out. With Ingram, it's like, well, you look at the size and the length, and he's okay. So he looks like the type of big wing that could play some four, maybe if he bulked up. He has shot it at a really high percentage, not this past year so much, but before that from deep. But it's low volume, and he kind of takes he kind of like his ideal offensive play seems to be having the ball in his hands and generating like a pull up two or something kind of in between. So that's the knock, is that you don't want to, you know, you can't survive on that kind of diet as a superstar. But just sort of the size, the way he looks out there, it all kind of makes you think there's a star in there, and there may be. But he does have quite a bit of work to do defensively too. For all his length, he really doesn't impact the game yet. But that's something where, you know, maybe outside of LA, maybe with the new coaching staff, that kind of potential really gets tapped into now.
Maybe a new lease on life. But the Pelicans got about $30 million in their war chest in which to go out and try and fill this roster. If David Griffin called you and said, Grant, I'm kind of struggling here. What do you think? You know the pieces that we have. We got one of the best two-way players out there in Holiday. We've got this phenomenon in Zion. He's only 19 years old, but, you know, we've got Jahlil Okafor has lost some weight, so we can give him some minutes. We've got Lonzo Ball at the point. Maybe I want to bring Ingram off the bench. Maybe I want to put Ingram into a deal and get another player. What would you say?
I think for me, I'm not sure I'd be trying to swing a trade, although Ingram probably would be the guy I'd look to move, just in case all of this potential doesn't get realized. You might want to get off, you know, get what you can for him before the league catches on. But to me, I think this summer, especially for a team like the Pelicans that has such a bright future, I think they've got to be really careful, because we haven't seen this much cap space since 2016 when all those just ridiculous long-term contracts got signed. And a lot of teams regretted that. And the Pelicans have it set up so well that, you know, to me, it's simple, but just find shooting. I don't care what position it's at, but if you're going to play Zion and you're going to play Lonzo Ball and you're going to play a conventional center, you got it. I mean, I'm talking, you need two, three guys, four guys in the wing rotation, even a four or even a center that can shoot, because that's the only way I think you're going to make this work offensively. So, you know, put in a call to Brook Lopez. See if he wants to come stretch the floor at the five. Okay. You know, Wayne Ellington, Reggie Bullock, not huge names, but you got to do something to open that floor up so Zion and Ball can really make it work.
Is Gasol a free agent up there in Toronto?
I think he opted in to the last year of his deal. So he could have been. But I think he's going to stick it out and see if they can run it back and keep Kawhi and maybe win another one.
Who are you most interested in seeing with this free agency coming about? Is it Durant? Is it Danny Ainge with the Celtics? Who are you really eyeballing when this thing starts on the 30th?
So, I mean, all those, the main guys are really interesting, the Leonards and the Durants. But to me, kind of big picture, I want to know what the market's going to be for sort of your second tier guys, because that's going to tell me, and you know, Jimmy Butler, Tobias Harris, Kemba Walker, those type of guys. I want to know what the market will be for them, because that's going to tell me, are we going to repeat the insanity of 2016 where Nick Batum is getting 5 years, $120 million, Evan Turner is getting $70 million. Out, you know, Kent Bazemore is getting $70 million. You know, so if you see those guys getting their 4 years, 164s, or in Walker's case, five for, I don't even remember, two something from the Hornets. If you see those kind of deals, I think it means we're in for some chaos and some regrettable moves. But if Butler or Harris is like 4 years and 120 or something like that, then I think maybe some sanity will be the way that this offseason plays out.
4 years, 120, that's $30 million a year. Hey, look, I've got to call the governor of Louisiana now the super governor, because now I can't call them owners anymore. I got to call them governors. What's your opinion on that? And there's I mean, gee, I don't get it.
Who cares, right? It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what we call it.
And Draymond Green tweets out that he's an owner of a business, and he's the one saying, I don't feel comfortable calling them owners.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, he can say what he wants, and, you know, it's weird. There's owners of lots of businesses, but I think, you know, it's maybe an issue we don't want to get too deep into. This is the time of year where everybody, you know, there are no games, but all the players are still very much engaged with social media and, you know, messaging and trying to, you know, get their names out there. So it's you know, they can say what they want. I don't really have that big of a problem with it.
I'm with you. But it all gets summed up with, now I figured out what's wrong with Sacramento. They've got one of their top executives who siphoned $13.4 million from the team, their chief revenue officer, Jeffrey David. That kind of sums up the Kings for all those years.
Well, you know, wouldn't it be nice if that had been the only problem, right?
Yeah.
He's not the guy that was trading future first-rounders for a few million in cap space so they could sign Carl Landry or Rajon Rondo or whatever that was a few years ago. Yeah, 7 years. He got 7 years for that. So he didn't get away with it.
Leave it to Graham Hughes to bring us back down to earth. It's all about trades and poor decisions along those lines in Hoopland. I know you're going to be busy following all this stuff. I'm very curious to see what happens with this thing. Can't wait. It just keeps on giving, man. It keeps on giving.
It does. It does. And look, this is not, you got maybe 3 days to breathe, and then we're going to be close enough to July 1st where there's just, it's going to be chaos.
Grant, thank you so much, buddy. Appreciate it.
You got it.
All right, that's Grant Hughes, NBA free agency coming up. We'll be back to wrap it up next.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local, 103.7 The Game.
And we welcome you back. D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson-Cecilia exit in Brobridge. It's my go-to stop. Make it yours because it's got everything you need for your travels. Whether you're going north, south, east, or west, 550 or 500 miles, D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon is there for you with that true soul food deli tucked away in the corner. Best cheeseburger ever. D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon. It was on this day, June 25th. We go back to the year 1997. The NBA draft took place, and with the first pick in the draft, the San Antonio Spurs selected Wake Forest power forward Tim Duncan, the big fundamental. 20 years later and four NBA titles mixed in, one of the all-time greats in NBA history. Tim Duncan, big day for him and the San Antonio Spurs today. June 25th, the year 1997. Wow. Man, if today is your birthday, man, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. You share with the likes of happy 54th birthday to one Del Curry. Steph Curry, Seth Curry. Yeah, he's got some good basketball breeding there, right? Del Curry, probably on the golf course with Steph as we speak. Happy 52nd birthday to the finger wagger, Dikembe Mutombo. Yes, indeed. And on the local scene, happy birthday to one Tasman Mitchell, now elevated as a full-time assistant coach under Will Wade, and center fielder for Palmieri for the last 4 years, Zach Watson, celebrating a birthday as well. So happy birthday to them. And again, happy birthday to all of you that share this day. If it's your anniversary, happy anniversary. I hope you keep adding year after year after year to it. Special thanks to our guest, Brody Miller, Richard Crawford, Patrick Crawford of the UL Sports Information staff, and Grant Hughes of Bleacher Report. Special thanks to Clint, producer extraordinaire, for coming up with all the sound from the LSU coaches at the LSU Coaches Caravan. We greatly appreciate all your hard work. Tomorrow, hump day with Huguenin for sure. And after that, we'll see where the winds blow and we'll bring it to you up close and personal. So thank you so much for tuning in each and every day from 2 to 4 here on 103.7 The Game. We greatly appreciate it. And to our partners that make it possible, you're the best. We have only one Tuesday, June 25th. Have a great rest of your afternoon and even better evening. Come back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4. Same great station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. Until then, I'm Jordy Hultberg. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.